So let's start with a prayer this morning. Brother Frank, would you lead our thoughts, please?
Our Father in heaven, we're thankful that you've let us come together again today to study your word and to worship you, and pray that everything we do and say will be in harmony with your will. Ask you to bless Brother Muller that he guides the class, that you would give him the memory to continue to study as you would have him to do. Ask you to bless him through the day. In Jesus' name we pray.
Amen. So our diagram is right here, and we're never going to lose our attention on that, because it actually is a very good guide for us understanding what is in the gospel, in the book of James, and actually how to carry out and into our own lives what James is trying to teach us. And so we've seen how that James is very focused on action. So Wednesday night, the beginning of chapter 3, what was the action that James emphasized and dealt with? Our speech. Do we think of speech as actions? We should, in a way, because this book is about showing your faith. And one way you show your faith is your speech. It's easy for us to dismiss or disassociate something we do and something we say. I think sometimes it's easy. I think the typical human thing is that we think, yeah, I would never do that. But, you know, yeah, I had a slip of the tongue and I said that. And that's not that big of a deal. Well, speech is action. And as we saw in James, early part of chapter 3, that speech has a huge impact. So our words and actions are coming from somewhere. And so it makes sense that James would deal with that, and that's what he's going to do here at the end of the third chapter in verses 13 to 18. He's going to talk about where our speech, where our actions all come from. And even though we've emphasized that James is more about application and action than ideas, you can't help but to talk about what's behind your actions, your thoughts behind your actions. And so now James is going to drill down and deal with our outlook. You could call it our philosophy, our worldview, but James calls it the wisdom we live by. And so that's what he's going to deal with. However, even in dealing with the wisdom by which we live, he's going to get on action. He's going to deal with action. That if you have this kind of wisdom, this is going to be the outcome. These are going to be the results. And so that's where we're headed with that. So let's start with verse 13, which really sets the tone for us and sets this whole section up. It's sort of like a bridge. He does this a lot. You know, most of our Bibles, we have headings in them, and our translations, maybe they're broken off in sections like paragraphs, and that's fine and good in our English translations. Sometimes they're not always accurate. But if you have that, you'll notice that there's usually a beginning statement, sort of a thesis statement, a synopsis of what he's about to talk about that sets the tone. And so it is with verse 13. Tristan, will you read chapter 3, verse 13, please? Just that one verse.
Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works and the meekness of wisdom.
You can see already, thank you, that this statement is connected to things said before. So let's talk a little bit about the connections. That's part of understanding the letter. It's also part of applying the letter, is that looking at the connections there. First of all, he begins with a question. Who is wise and understanding among you? Well, how do you prove that you're wise and understanding? He answers his own question. How do you prove who's wise and understanding?
By your behavior.
By your works that you show. Duh. That's what the letter is all about, right? Let him show his works. Also, the idea there, he asks this question in verse 13 of chapter 3. But go back to chapter 2, verse 14. He begins that section with a question. What is that question? So somebody says he has faith, but he doesn't have works. Can that faith save him? So these are rhetorical questions that he's asking. And he does that there too. And think about how 2:14 is like 3:13. What do they have in common? How do you know somebody has faith? They show it by their behavior, their works. How do you know somebody has wisdom? You show it by your works. Same idea. So watch how that many of the things he said about faith, now he's going to say about wisdom. Which tells us that there is a connection between faith and wisdom. And just like faith is not just something you possess, but something you demonstrate, wisdom is not just something you hold, like you acquire it mentally and you just sort of hold it. Wisdom is something you live. You can have all the right thoughts, but if you don't live them, you're a fool. Now, keep this in mind. Keep the book of Proverbs in mind. Because this fall, we'll arrive at the book of Proverbs in our congregational readings. This fall, we'll have a class on Proverbs. And in a way, James is self-standing, but James helps to set up Proverbs for us. Or you could say Proverbs sets up James. But there is a correlation, and they really complement one another very well. So, this idea that he's going to talk about wisdom being shown by works, he's already established that principle, okay? And now he's going to build on that with wisdom. And what has he said about wisdom already in this letter? Going back early in the letter, what has he already said about wisdom? Here?
If you don't have it, you should ask of God.
You can get it by asking of God in faith. Oh, there's faith and wisdom again. There's faith and wisdom combined again. So wisdom is attainable from God by asking for it. And that statement that Daryl's talking about is back in chapter 1, verse 5. What's the context that we looked at that, you know, we really need wisdom in this situation? What's the situation he's depicting in the early verses of chapter 1? Facing what?
Trials.
We need wisdom in facing trials. And we can get it by praying for it. God is the source of wisdom. And think about that, because he's going to really elaborate on that, because he's going to talk about two different kinds of wisdoms, and one comes from one source, one comes from the other. So he's already talked about God being the source of wisdom. He's going to come back to that idea right here. And he uses this term, you know, who's wise and understanding, by his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. I'm working from the English Standard Version, and I failed to really dive into the other translations. I don't think they vary a whole lot in this text. But what other expressions do you have there? Let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. Is that the same that you have, or do you have something else?
Gentleness.
Okay, in the gentleness of wisdom. Okay.
Let him show his good behavior. Let him show by his good behavior, his deeds of gentleness.
And gentleness of wisdom, that's New King James, right? Or New American, New King James?
No, it's New American Standard.
New American, okay.
New King James says, let him show by good conduct that his works were done in meekness of wisdom.
That his works were done in meekness of wisdom, okay. That's gentleness and wisdom, or meekness and wisdom. What an interesting combination there. All right. What has he already said about meekness or gentleness? We're to have it in a certain situation. You remember back in actually chapter 1, toward the end of chapter 1, verse 21. How are we to employ meekness? When what? When we receive the word of God. We're to receive it with meekness. You remember what our working definition of meekness was then? Remember I said that it's not weakness. They rhyme in the English, but in the original language, they have nothing to do with each other. I actually gave an illustration that it was a term used, and I said something about horses. Do you remember?
Power under control.
It was a term used to describe a broken horse. Not a wild horse, but one that had been trained to handle a rider, or to be used under a harness. something like that. So you have this power of this horse, but it's been controlled and utilized. That's meekness. Humans have a lot of energy, force, willpower. Humans have strength. And it could be, you know, physical strength or psychological strength or whatever. But will it be channeled and properly used? That's the question. When someone channels their energies and they manage their strength and power, then they're showing meekness. And meekness, as we'll see it explained in this text, often is understood and displayed in regards to human relationships. It is possible that you could talk about meekness without talking about relationships. But when you begin to define meekness and look at the fruit of meekness and look at what meekness really is when the rubber hits the road, so to speak, it almost always involves our relationships with each other. Do we have our power under control in our relationships with each other? Oh, by the way, has he just been talking about that? What did he just write about that we saw Wednesday night? Controlling what power?
Power of the tongue.
Power of the tongue. This is such an organic book. It's just got all, I know you're tired of me saying this, but it's got, if you flip it underneath it, you see all these little strings tied to the different parts with each other. I mean, it's just incredible how it's connected. It's brilliant. And it's written, duh, of course, from God. So, here's where we're headed with this. If meekness has its manifestation in relationships, and we're called upon to have the meekness of wisdom, what this is going to talk about is having and showing wisdom in our relationships. And at the core of our wisdom in how we interact with other people is meekness or power under control. When we just turn things loose and we don't restrain, channel, control, and direct and guide ourselves, relationships are all busted up. They're hurt, they're damaged, they're strained. The kinds of relationships God wants us to have are those that are based on the meekness of wisdom, that things are under control. He's talked about that with the tongue. So, before, he's talked about wisdom in the face of trials. Now he's going to talk about wisdom in relationships with other people. And back in chapter 1, verse 19 to 21, where we find that term meekness first used here, or gentleness. 19 to 21, go back and look at that. 1:19 to 21. He's contrasting things. What's he contrasting in 19 to 21? You can have this, or you can have that. There's a contrast. What's he contrasting in these verses?
Arrogant speaking, for one thing.
Okay. You can be a person who is slow to speak, quick to hear, slow to anger, or you can be a person who's quick to anger, quick to speak, and won't listen to anybody. See the contrast there? Because he talks about the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. When anger is out of control, that's not right with God. And what's the contrast in verse 21? We can either do what or do what? We can be filled with what or what?
Wickedness or the word.
Wickedness or the word. To get the word in us, we've got to get rid of the filthiness and the wickedness and receive the implanted word, the word that comes inside of us. But that word can't take root if our hearts are filled with wickedness and filthiness. Okay? So see that contrast. Well, James comes back to this approach as he's talking about meekness and wisdom, and he's going to make another contrast. He's going to talk about two wisdoms in verses 14 to 18. Watch for what these two wisdoms are here in chapter 3, verses 14 to 18. Ray Conies, can you read that for us, please?
But if you have bitter jealousy and faction in your heart, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom is not a wisdom that cometh down from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For a jealousy and faction are there is confusion in every vile deed. The wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without variance, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace for them that make peace.
All right, thank you very much. So how do you characterize the two wisdoms here? What are they?
One is from God and the other one is from man.
You're right. One from God, one from man. How else can we say it? Because there's a lot of words here that we could come up with two different categories. From God or from man? Great. What else?
Or the devil.
One is from God, one from the devil. Demonic. What else? He actually doesn't say wisdom from God. He says wisdom from above, which is in contrast to wisdom from below. You could also say wisdom from heaven or wisdom from earth. Not just talking about earth as a celestial body of planet, but rather earth as in the system of living and human ways and so forth. Yeah.
One produces good fruits and one produces chaos.
Okay. One has positive, constructive outcomes. One has negative outcomes. So outcomes are talked about here. Boy, he deals with everything. He talks about source and outcome. He talks about cause and effect. He really covers that well. I think we've emphasized in this class that the hub of what he's saying in this letter is found in chapter 2, verse 14 down to verse 26. If I had to say the next section that captures what the book is about, it's this section, verses 14 to 18. This is another hub, big idea kind of sections from which all the actions that James is talking about is going to spin off from that one source or the other. So let's first of all talk about the wisdom from below. We can talk about from the earth or from devil or man or whatever, but wisdom from below. So this is where our translations do vary a little bit. Ray, what were you reading from?
ASV.
Okay, American Standard. So this is where they vary a little bit, but they're right on top of each other in understanding. So what are the characteristics? What are the qualities of the wisdom from below? Let's list it.
Jealousy.
Jealousy.
Selfish ambition.
Selfish ambition.
Bragging.
Boastful.
Disorder.
Disorder is part of it. Let's talk about the characteristics. In the disorder is sort of the outcome, but we'll come back to that. Disorder's in there.
Ignorance.
Ignorance.
False teaching.
Okay. False. What else is to say?
Self-seeking.
Self-seeking or selfish ambition.
Strife is another word.
Okay. It's an outcome. It comes from it. Yeah. And it can also be a characteristic too. Okay. What about,
confusion.
Okay, that's another outcome, disorder, or confusion. Yeah, okay. So here are the ones that are found in the English Standard Version. Bitter jealousy, selfish ambition, it's earthly in nature, it's unspiritual, and it's demonic. Okay, not a very good list there. And then there are the outcomes that you all have identified, and the outcomes are disorder and vile practices, as it says in the English Standard, because it has the characteristics, verse 14 and 15. And then it says in verse 16, where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile passion. So what other translations do you have besides disorder and vile passions or practices? That's the end of verse 16. Every evil thing. I think, Dave, you said confusion, right? Is your translation. Okay. So that's very broad. The outcome is that things are, out of control and disorderly. And the thing that comes out of this is just every kind of evil, terrible, wicked thing. I mean, that's very generic, but there you go. Does that. Now, there are characteristics that he reinforces about this wisdom from below. In other words, what are the characteristics that James really doubles down on? What What are the two things he repeats here in this text?
Selfishness and jealousy.
True. Selfish ambitions and jealousy. Your translation may have envy. These are what I would call the deadly twins. There's a lot right there. Before we talk about the relationship, how they're twins, let's talk about them individually first of all. So this term jealousy or envy, somebody give us a good definition of that. What is jealousy?
Hatred of somebody else for whatever reason, right? Whether it's, you know, political or financial or whatever.
Okay. So there's ill will towards someone else. Even can be hatred. Why? What's stimulating it?
Desiring what they have and not being content with what you have.
Okay. They have, or they're experiencing something and you're not. Or maybe you are too, but you don't want to share it with them. But you resent, you have ill will, the fact that they have something or they're experiencing something and that troubles you. Selfish ambition. What are other translations saying here? For selfish?
Faction. What? Faction.
Faction? Okay. That's American Standard. Okay, a little older translation. Anything else? On, what's New King James and New American say? Or bitter jealousy or envy and what?
Self-seeking.
Self-seeking. Okay. Same thing. Get it? Selfish ambition, self-seeking. See the similarity there. How would you define that?
Self-promotion.
So you want to promote yourself, elevate self?
As it's rooted in pride.
It's very prideful-based, ego-based, those kinds of things. It's very self-oriented, self-centered. There are certain things you long for and desire and you aspire for, and it's selfish. Well, how are they related? Selfish ambition and jealousy. How are they twins? They come out of the same womb nearly at the same time.
If you're selfishly ambitious and you see someone else has something that you don't have, that selfish ambition makes you envious of what they have because you want it for yourself.
Right. You can almost say the jealousy stems from that selfish ambition, that self-seeking. I wrote this down. Pardon the complicated words. Being facetious. It's very simple. We want what we want. And we don't like it when others get what they want. Or they get what we want. It's almost a tongue twister. A lot of W's there. We want what we want. All five first words are W's. We want what we want. And we don't like it when others get what they want. Or they get what we want. This right here is like rain in the last week in Asheville. It's just falling everywhere, all the time. It's raining again. I mean, it's just pervasive. And if we think we can be immune from it, we're foolish. Not very wise. Remember, James is writing to Christians. He's writing to believers. And these are two of the base drives, not basic drives, but base drives. You're living by earthly wisdom when you're fueled by this. And it is so easy to be fueled by this. Matter of fact, it could be said that the system of the world is fueled by this. This is what the world runs on. You go out there and get what you want. And you, if you got to step on somebody to get it or elbow them to get it, you get it. And don't be happy when they have it and you don't. Matter of fact, in some circles, this is celebrated. That, you know, I was really good at this and somebody came along and they were better and I got angry and I got better. Isn't that great? Look at me. Look how successful I am. They end up making more money than me, but then I made more money than them. Look at that, you know. And sometimes that's celebrated in their culture. Okay. And when you're driven by earthly wisdom, selfish motives and jealousy make perfect sense. when your wisdom is based on the earth, not on God, not on heaven, not on what's eternal, not on what is spiritual, when you're without Christ, then selfish ambition and jealousy makes perfect sense. They're natural. And what James is telling us is that can't be part of who we are. So there's some, you know, real serious tests we need to apply ourselves, you know. How do I view myself and how do I view other people? And that's an individual kind of question. How do I view myself? And then how do I view people? But oftentimes it's important because look at this. This is something inside of us that's affecting other our relationships. Ambition and jealousy. So how do I view myself and other people and in light of other people? Can I weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice? Without jealousy and resentment. Some people get jealous when others are rejoicing because they don't have something to rejoice about. And some people get jealous because somebody has something to weep about and people are sympathizing with them and they're not getting the attention. Some people love tragedy because it puts them in the center of attention. So this is deep. This is really cutting very deep here. You know, think about your relationship history. Has this characterized your relationships? You know, do you have a lot of sensitivity about how you're treated? Especially if you feel like you've been mistreated. And do you have a sensitivity about how others are treated? Maybe when they're praised or honored or they get attention or something and that bothers you. When other people get attention or they have success or positive things that happen, and that bothers you, there's some, you know, it's time for some deep CAT scanning of the soul, so to speak. What's in here? What's inside my heart here that's causing this? And James flips it here and begins to talk about the wisdom from above. Yes?
I've seen this with different couples over the years growing up. but it's not always material either. It's not financial. It's not what he has, I want. It can be relationships. Sure. They look at a family and they think, oh, why doesn't my family look like that or act like that or appear like that?
Right. Yeah.
And I've seen that destroy a family within itself because they can't look to God and look to what they're doing that maybe is causing problems in their family. They just keep looking at these other families and saying, well, I want that. You know, I want to be like that family. And not even realizing that family struggles. That family works hard to communicate and have the love. And you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. No, there's different kinds of things you can be jealous about, including that. And,
I've seen that a couple times.
Yeah, and I don't want to open this can of worms, but it does make me think about how that social media has fueled trophy children and grandchildren.
Yeah.
It's all about me showing the world how wonderful my family is, whether it is or not. And it's about trophy children and trophy grandchildren. Look at my trophies on the shelf. And and others can see that and get really bitter about it. You know, people can throw salt in that bitterness and make it even more painful. Yes?
Just overall, it's easy to fall into the trap of we measure ourselves against other people and what they have. Either we validate that we're superior in some way to them or inferior in some way, and instead of, you know, measuring ourselves against Christ, I suppose we're looking at that as being standards.
Right. That's a great way to put it. That's the wrong standard. That's part of that standard and wisdom from below. Yes.
Not to make excuses, but everybody's talked about it. It is human nature. So our primary issue is dealing with these human desires.
Right.
And Christ always calls us to a higher standard. So that's why throughout the entire Bible, it's like, you know, don't hate, love, don't murder. You know, it does all strive from this, you know, contention and and pride and discontentment too. But I mean, that is why it's constantly there throughout the Bible, because it is so natural for us to be this way. Right. And Christ says, he's always says, do the opposite right. in everything almost.
Right. And that's where that term meekness of wisdom comes into play here. And that is, we may have these things, but how are we controlling them? Do we have them under a harness, you know, and bridle kind of thing? Yeah.
It's been said that envy is the thief of joy. And it really is. It robs you of contentment and joy in your life when you're constantly looking around at what other people have and wishing you had.
Yeah. Because if you didn't see this guy with that kind of car, you may have been very, very happy with your car. And 6 months before, you loved it when you got that car, and you were just so happy. But then you see this other guy with this car, and you're miserable. And that just, boy, that is like a maddening cycle, isn't it? Maddening, yes.
There was an older couple here that died many years ago named Eleanor and Rose Bardell. And Eleanor was a very wise man. And he would tell us, he lived closer to us, and back then bought his house. But we would go over there fairly frequently because they were just down the road from us. And he'd tell us all these stories of what he did from day to day and things. And at that time, as it is now, a lot of telemarketers, you know, calling. And he would answer the phone and just talk to them. Extensive conversations. and they would, of course, be trying to sell him something. And he said, yeah, that sounds really nice. Maybe it's a vacation, you know, or something that they're trying to sell. And he just agreed with them all the way through. Yeah. That sounds really nice. And whoever the salesperson is just thinking, oh boy, I've got this one in the basket. And at the end, he said, well, it sounds really nice, but I just don't want it.
and that's
where we need to come to with a lot of things. There's nothing wrong with having something nice, but the billboard's nice, but I don't want it. You know, if I had that, I would have to take care of it. And it would just be too much.
Right.
You know, but I think his level of maturity on things like that is just great. And he had a great sense of humor. But just to acknowledge, okay, there's nice things in the world that we could possess. But do we need it? I could have a nicer car than I have, but do I need? Well, right now I do.
Sometimes you do have to have it.
2 weeks for the transmission to get fixed. Right now I could use a better car. But generally speaking, it could, you know, we get by with it.
Right.
And there's a lot of wisdom in what James is saying here. And there, it's good to develop some sales resistance because there's so much, the world is driven off of commerce and selling people stuff. You know, and we really, as Christians, need to resist that. You know, the world just goes overboard in directing and especially with all the media trying to get us to believe that we need things that we don't really
right.
need. In other words, they invent things that we need.
Right.
Drugs are one of these things, you know, advertisements for drugs. They invent things that you have that you don't really have, but you might have this. Ask your doctor about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just on and on and on.
Yeah.
But to acknowledge, I thought Elmer's attitude towards that was really good. It was minor, the things that you were talking about, but it's okay to acknowledge that, yeah, that's a nice thing. I'm glad you got it. My grandmother used to say, Grandmother Wicker, And we, as kids, we did something nice, or mom and dad did something nice, she'd say, well, I'm proud of it for you. In other words, she didn't want it, but I'm glad you got it.
Right.
It's nice that you got that.
Right.
Yeah. And that's where we have to guard against becoming pharisaical, that I might choose to say that's not something I want or need, and I'm not going to fuel that desire for something. But if somebody else is blessed with something and has something, that's between them and the Lord, and I'm just going to rejoice that they have it and be grateful for that. And because you can become judgmental, and thus you may not have the ambition, but you can sort of like, well, they should be more like me. They shouldn't be buying that. And that's not productive. You know, again, it goes back to the point Daryl made about we shouldn't compare ourselves to each other, but to the Lord's standard kind of thing. Well, thank you for those comments. Let's look at the wisdom from above that he talks about here. What are the characteristics of that wisdom?
Pure.
Peaceable.
Gentle.
Reasonable
or open to reason. I think Ray's translation said something about easy to entreat or something like that. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Easy to approach or entreat.
Yes, easy to be entreated.
Willing to yield, okay. What else?
Full of mercy.
Full of mercy, okay.
Good fruits.
What else?
Without partiality.
Without partiality. Have we seen that? In relationships? James 2, about the man coming into the assembly that's rich, or the man coming in that's poor, and showing partiality. And James related that to loving your neighbor. And so, without partiality, and English Standard says sincere. So here's the list in the English Standard Version right there. And as a result, what are the outcomes? Verse 18.
Planting a good crop.
Yeah, a crop of righteousness, a harvest of righteousness, and sown in peace by those who make peace. Okay? Righteousness means being right with God. Sometimes we equate righteousness with pure or holy living, and that's okay. Righteous living is a right concept, and deeds of righteousness are great. But righteousness is about being right with God. It's rightness with God. That's righteousness. And then there's peace. And in a lot of this context, I think what it's referring to is you're right with God and you have peace with others. I think that's what it's talking about, is that horizontal and that vertical relationship. That there's righteousness and peace there with God and with others. And look at this. Go back to verse 13. Who is wise and understanding? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. Well, verse 17 and 18 is an elaboration of that. What does he mean by showing works in the meekness of wisdom? He means you live a life that's characterized by purity, peacefulness, gentleness, open to reason, full of mercy, impartial, sincere, etc. That's what it means. Okay? So, look how that these are about, so much about our relationships. So much about them, like the impartial thing that we've talked about. So, in light of what he said there, I want to lay out two concluding points. One is, what James is teaching us is that one source or the other is going to be the guide for our thinking and behavior. There are two options here. Wisdom from above or wisdom from below. We need to be aware that we're using Brother Elmer's idea of buying, okay? What are you buying and what are you not buying? We have to understand we're buying into a philosophy. We're buying into a wisdom. Which one is it? We want to think of ourselves, especially our culture, of being unique individuals. And so, you know, here's this guy walking down the street. His hair is spiked, and it's got purple and pink streaks, and he's tatted and pierced in places you just don't even know. And he's got these weird clothing, and he thinks he's so cool and unique. You look over the other street corner and there's a guy dressed just like him. That he saw him dressed that way, he went out and found the same outfit, okay, kind of thing. We want to think of ourselves as unique. We are affected by what's around us way more than we realize. We're not as individual as we think we are. We're not as independent as we think we are. And so the question becomes, okay, if I'm going to be influenced, what do I choose as my influence? What's going to shape me? Because our actions and our attitudes are coming from one or the other of these wisdoms. And how do we get earthly wisdom, by the way? How do we come by earthly wisdom?
Observing other people.
Watching other people. Listening to them.
Trial and error.
Okay. Could be trial and error.
Media.
Yeah. You what?
Media.
Media. Messages. Official messages. Right?
I think if you allow a vacuum by not actively pursuing God's wisdom,
it seeps in.
That will take in.
You know, Jesus talked about the demons being cast out, and then the demons came back in. You know, the house is all swept, and the demons come back in. It's worse than the first time. If you don't fill yourself with the wisdom from above, the wisdom from below is going to creep in. How do you get the wisdom from above? What's James already taught us about that?
Praying, asking.
Ask God for that wisdom.
Not doubting.
Yeah, and doing it with faith. Faith is shown. You don't just believe God can do something. You pray as if He's going to do it. Okay. Yes.
You know, folks who try to be nonconformists aren't really nonconformists. They're just conforming to nonconformity. We're all conforming.
Yeah.
The question is, what are we conforming to?
Right. How else can we get that wisdom from above? That godly wisdom.
You study. Word.
That implanted word that we receive. If we're going to have the meekness of wisdom, we need the meekness that allows the word to get implanted in our heart. Isn't it incredible how you take this James language and start picking up the pieces and putting it together? It all fits. You know, Les gave this example of the brother who demonstrated a godly kind of wisdom. A wisdom, but it was godly. It was based on spiritual things, not physical things. We can learn from each other in a positive way. We'll see that in Proverbs. Proverbs starts on the note of, son, listen to your father. How's that son going to get wise? By listening to the father who has gained his wisdom from God. Because then the father is speaking in Proverbs and saying, the beginning of knowledge, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. So by relationship with God and understanding of God, you can find wisdom. And I'm going to help you see that. Yeah, Chris?
By imitating other people of faith as they imitate Christ, like Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians.
Exactly. When you think about the first book we have after the Gospels, Acts. We have a lot of preaching in Acts. We have a lot of actions in Acts. And it's there for us. Okay, thank you so much.